งสองเนี่ยเล่นเหมือนกับเด็กเลยถ้าคนอื่นมาเห็นเข้าแล้วมันจะไม่ดี
นะครับมันอีกไกลมากกว่าจะถึงอีกด่านนึงอะครับ
กว่าจะถึงบ้านต้นยางอะ
กว่าจะถึงบ้านต้นยาง
78โลคร
ับ78โลแล้วทางเป็นอย่างนี้ตลอด
หนักกว่านี้ครับ
หนักกว่านี้อีกใช่มั้ย
นี่ไม่ไหวแน่เล
ยนี่2เพลามั้ยครับ
ครับ2เพลาแต่มันรถมันเตี้ย
เตี้ยนี่ก็ไม่แน่ใจนะครับ
อาจจะพอไหวใช่มั้ยพี
่พอไหวมันจะมีหนักอยู่เนินนึงอะเนินลงจากนี้แล้วก็ขึ้นไปอีกเนินนั้นก็ขึ้นไปได้ก็
พ้นแล้วใช่มั้ย
เนินนี้ก็ขึ้นได้ครับมันเป็นทางปูน
พอจะเดินสองครับ
ทางเลี้ยวสองหก
พอจะรอดครับจากไปกระไดสองสองไปกระไดสองหกแค่วันนี้เองครับ
ก็เกิดไอสองสองสองหกแค่วันนี้เองไปแล้วข้อที่12เชิญจอด
ไปคืนนึง าต้นยางเท่าไหร่หรือเปล่า
เอาไปขาย
มันจะไปไหวแล้วเนี่ยมันก็
ไม่ไหวครับ
นี่ขึ้นไปแล้วลงมาแล้ว
หน้าฝนต้องมาหน้าแล้ง
มันต้องปิด
มันต้องมาห่มมันต้องปิดผังโคเวอร์นะ
คือผมจะมาทำพวกสารคดีครับพี่เกี่ยวกับกะเหรี่ยงครับเกี่ยวกับก๊อดอาร์มี่ครับพี่รู้จักไหมคร
ับเคยได้ยินข่าวป่ะครับ
ผมก็เป็นก๊อดอาร์มี่
จริงเหรอชิบหายแล้ว
จริงป่ะครับพี่
จริงครับผมก็เป็นหนึ่งเลยนะ
เฮ้ย
จริงเหรอ
พี่โม้ผมปะเนี่ย
อ้าวจริงดิผมก็เป็นกะเหรี่ยงคนหนึ่งที่อยู่ในเชื้อสายของคนกลุ่มนั้น
จริงเหรอครับ
เฮ้ย
พี่ก็รู้จักกับจอนนี่กับลูเทอร์คร
ับ นั่นคือตอนนี้เขาอยู่ที่แต่เหมือนกับว่าเรื่องราวมันจะเงียบหายไปแล้ว
ใช่ครับคือตอนนี้เขาทำอะไรอยู่พี่รู
้ตอนนี้เราไม่รู้เพราะว่าเพื่อนฝูงที่อยู่ด้วยกันเนี่ยคือต่างคนต่างแยกย้ายหายหมดคือเราเกิดที่นี่เสร็จแล้วเราก็ไปเรียนที่โรงเรียนตชด.ตชด.เสร็จก็ไปต่อทีละระดับอะไปไต่จนถึงไปจบแค่ปวส.ที่เกษตรการแค่นั้นก็กลับมาทำงานที่บ้านตระกูลเราวงตระกูลเราตั้งแต่โน้นคือเป็นกะเหรี่ยงคือตั้งแต่เรื่องมันเกิดเนี่ยเราก็ต่างคนต่างก็ไม่ค่อยคุยกับคนฝั่งนั้นเท่าไหร่เพราะคนฝั่งนั้นเขาจะอยู่แบบกลุ่มของเขาเองอะไรเงี้ยเรานับถือเขาเป็นเหมือนกับว่าเขาเป็นนายเราอ่ะ
คือนุ่ยอะคือพอคือนุ่ยแล้วลูกตาเล็กก็คือสปอร์ตเจก็ลูกตาไป
ไปตั้งแต่2007เลย
ไอคนน้องนี่กลับพม่าใน2005คนหลังอยู่หน้า2ปี
พี่ก็ไป
นี่ทั้งแรก
สวีเดน
ตอนที่เห็นนี่12 13นึงแล้วมั้งมีเรื่องเล็กอยู
่
ผมยาว
นี่อยากให้ให้กินข้าวหรือเปล่า
Can we have light, please? Thanks. So So Chakraval Neel Tamrong calls this film that you've just seen an excerpt of a documentary, as it also referred to inside the film. I want to suggest to call this mode of documentary a frontier realism. It's a film, like most of Chakraval's work, that ventures into borderlands where common sense categories are suspended, and in this suspension, a different reality and temporality emerges. A borderland of life and death, dream and wakefulness, and between the visible world and invisible forces and spiritualities that shape and traverse the different registers of our experiences. It is the second of a series of two films in Neel Tamrong's oeuvre, where he engages with the concept of gravity as such an invisible force. The film takes place in the borderland between Thailand and Burma. Set in Ratchaburi, Zero Gravity follows a man on a journey into the area's recent past, that is this rescue worker you have seen lying on the ground in the last scene. And rescue operations, as I learned in Thailand, are privatized and they compete over the bodies of injured or dead people in case of incidences and accidents. As a side note, Ratchaburi Hospital was the site of a national, so-called national incident in the year 2000, when the hospital was occupied and staff taken hostage by the armed Karen guerrillas under the commandment of the God's Army from neighboring Burma. The leadership was of which was attributed to two 12-year-old twins, as you have learned from the film. The 10 occupying guerrillas were killed during the intervention of the Thai army, some scandalously executed on the spot after surrender. This incident had a certain significance in raising public awareness over the situation in Burma and the war fought by the Karen people in its south for a long time. And it was also connected to the insurgency that started around the same time in the south of Thailand. Without going into detail here, and there are people in the audience that know a lot of details around these particular histories, I merely wanted to direct your attention to a detail in the film that embodies, in my eyes, the conception that is put forward here of the frontier as a zone of unruly mediations held in suspense. And that, for me, is in particularly present in this floating radio walkie-talkie device. The part of the film that you haven't seen becomes ever more surreal as this dead woman ghost reappears, that is also pregnant, so again, a kind of contradiction in terms. but I'm not going to narrate that whole part because it's also not quite easy to do so. Later today, we will have the chance to listen and watch Nontawat Numbenchapol's screening lecture, No Boy's Land, which takes us once again into the Thai-Burmese borderlands, which has also served as a refuge for the Shan people fighting for independence after their villages being frequently raided by the Burmese military. No Boy's Land is a documentary film that follows a character who loses his family at the age of 18 and joins the Shan state army to become a soldier with a lifetime duty to fight for Shan liberation from the Burmese. Sang Not Lot's life is, like that of many others, determined by war, the rise of nationalism, ethnocentrism, and abstract borders. He lives without papers in a vacuum between two countries, a liminal state where one remains in suspension. I shall say that we had a hard time choosing the contributions for this weekend in particular. This is because there's a veritable wave of extremely convincing, often epic work by artists working in different media and genres produced in the region we are devoting ourselves to in this project. Artworks that are dealing with the lived experiences and haunted existences in relation to the narrative and imaginary of modernity's frontiers, and that confront, in particular, colonial, imperial, and state violence. I like to think of many of them as engaging in a kind of frontier realism. Even if we are no fans of such labels, I think this concept of a frontier realism can help us see a common concern implicit in these works and in their aesthetics and modes of storytelling. I want to take them seriously as contributions to what we can call, with James Scott, anarchist historiographies, which are not subjected to the molds of national identities, and hence make other subjectivities thinkable, perhaps possible, breaking through the disillusioned present by reconceiving the relation of the past to the present. The common concerns in these works, I believe, is the search for a form of collectivity, for a subterranean shared memory and common imaginary, which does not subsume differences but resists the boundary-making practices, the divisions inflicted by imperial and colonial schemes and the nation-state in their wake. This shared dimension is to be unearthed at the frontier through an analysis of the frontier and its mediums. Most schematically, a frontier is a zone of confrontation and uncertainty where one form of order meets another, often imagined in binary terms as order meeting disorder or chaos. It is not a naturalized border between sovereign entities that have more or less symmetric relations. Rather, it is a zone characterized by asymmetries. For instance, and perhaps typically so, between state and non-state actors. Anna Tsing calls these frontiers zones of simultaneous mapping and unmapping. My central and not the least original thesis here today is, however, that the frontier is not merely some remote limit, some disorderly borderland at the margins of order or the law, but that it structures the imaginary and the symbolic within the present order alike. Every picture and every linguistic argument we make beneath the surface partakes in its logic. In a very fundamental sense, then, the frontier is also the limit of common sense, and perhaps of sense as such. The frontier opens to what Michael Taussig has called a death space of signification, a space of inversions and often outright travesty and arbitrariness. And the frontier also activates the senses, is the place of extreme sensations and generally of deranged categories and unruly mediations, a place of violent enactions of divisions that are equally at all times held in suspense. It is to these moments of suspense, as they are dramatized in a few artworks, that the examples I show here today are devoted. The experience of the frontier is always radically out of sync with the image produced by civilizational discourse and its ideological superstructure. This is one of the central themes of James Scott's seminal study, The Art of Not Being Governed, an Anarchist History of Upland Southeast Asia. Scott's survey is written in the tradition of anarchist historiography, and as such presents a challenge to the genre of historical narrative as such, to the way in which historical narratives enact the logic of imperial and state-making projects. In the lineage of Pierre Clastres' seminal work, Societies Without a State, The Art of Not Being Governed is an archaeology of an ancient conflict, which puts the critique of colonialism into a wider perspective, one necessitated by the grand enclosure of the present day, the grand enclosure of globalized capitalism and the Anthropocene. This is the conflict between bureaucratic empires based on fixed field agriculture and grain production with nomadic or semi-nomadic forms of subsistence and autonomy. The history of this ancient conflict, of this ancient frontier, flashes up today in the moment of danger that is the ecological and political crisis of the Anthropocene. Indeed, this conflict characterizes almost the entire period known as the Holocene. This period, the Holocene, this epoch, this geological epoch, the same period as the beginning of the Neolithic, seems to be determined by this by to an overwhelming degree by a particular dialectics evolving around a bifurcation. A bifurcation that determines the matrix of discourse of possible narratives. It is the bifurcation instantiated by sedentary culture based on cultivation and the culture of typically non-state people engaged in foraging or shifting cultivation, which later transforms into the binary of state and non-state, civilization and its others. It is the very conflict that is also at the heart of the Bible, among other narratives to be found there, of course. This is also a story of the nomadic Semitic inhabitants of the southern Arabian Peninsula who were conquered by the farmers inhabiting the northern Fertile Crescent. This conflict between expansionist farmers who segment the territory and semi-nomadic herders is reflected in the emblematic figures of Abel and Cain. Anarchist historiographies such as Clastres or James Scott's oppose and expose the bias and power structures at work in history written with capital H. They are histories written from the perspective of what is of what such civilizational discourses foreclose, histories that do not reinforce the bifurcation, but instead engage in its dialectics, countering the phantasmatic dimension of such discourse by exposing the frontier as a complex process of mediation. No such thing as a Thai civilization or a Chinese culture, to use two examples from The Art of Not Being Governed, are taken for granted in such an analysis. Rather, these works engage with the construction of such identities from an analytical vantage point, from where they are not taken as a given, but appear as products of practices of division and of the forms of mediation that these practices authorize and foreclose alike. In The Art of Not Being Governed, the story that is told revolves around the highlands traversing at least five Southeast Asian nations, Thailand, Burma, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, as well as much of southern China, a vast territory with over a million minority inhabitants of great diversity that has for centuries served as a refuge from conscription into imperial and state rule and their respective civilizing missions. This designated geography has earned itself also the name Zomia, about which we will learn a little bit more later. There's a vast amount of writings, materials, and increasingly of artworks that one could use to circumscribe and ever expand the geography of Zomia. Initially, we wanted to organize an exhibition under this heading. An exhibition devoted to the artful historiographies of various genres in what I just suggested could be called frontier realism. An exhibition that would disclose a radically different geography in a region that is today characterized by intensified onslaught of renewed imperial aspiration, resource extraction, and the advance of industrial agriculture into the remaining forest and its indigenous populations. But as James Scott notes himself at the outset in his book, while vast areas of Zomia today are still contested frontiers, often characterized by resistance and violence, Zomia is to a certain degree a thing of the past. Imperial and state control now profess over technological and infrastructural means that have made it possible to extend control into the very zones whose terrain has previously made it impenetrable. Historically and on a global scale today, the dawn of aircraft technology, for instance, stands for this ability of states to act at a distance. Hence, perhaps, the presence of drone warfare, as A.L. Weizmann has shown in his work on the aridity line, on the line that separates cultivatable land all around the world, more or less, at least stretching from West Africa to the Gobi Desert cultivatable land from the desert. And in most of these areas today, you have exactly the presence of drone warfare. So we decided not to do an exhibition on The Art of Not Being Governed in Zomia. we also saw artistically, perhaps more than intellectually, a certain danger for falling for a romanticism for non-state spaces that at times could also be seen as playing out politically reactionary or finding itself at least in uncomfortable neighborhoods, let's say, with certain non-state or anti-state ideologies from another West Coast. So our central question was then, what has happened to these frontiers? How do we locate them in the present within this vast, internally fractured, though, enclosure that is the Anthropocene? Where is the frontier today then, was our question. The answer, in short, it has become a planetary envelope. To break through its grip on the imaginary and imagine a different reality, one different from the violent exterminism, subjugation, and resource extraction that characterizes this envelope. It is necessary, we believe, to locate its workings in aesthetics and dominant media technologies as well. The central piece of the exhibition, Two or Three Tigers, One or Several Tigers by Ho Zunyan, I believe, does just that. What appears at first as a delirious mythical narrative, as a gothic opera, perhaps even exoticist, is upon a second gaze just that, an attempt of what Etienne Turpin, in his contribution to our collection of texts that we have online as the Two or Three Tigers Journal, calls the necessity to historicize the human architectures of enclosure. So my next excerpt, which is 8 minutes long, is from Ho Zunyan's One or Several Tigers. And the quality here in this screening doesn't do justice to the work, so I encourage everyone who hasn't seen it yet to go see it in its setting in the exhibition hall.
Time stands still, and in the flash of this encounter, it's one and the other, what time becomes another. George Drumgold Coleman, a government superintendent of the public works in Singapore, surveyor of the station, came face to face with the tiger. The clamour of this clash makes it easy to overlook the rest of the image. Coleman was also the superintendent of convicts in Singapore. He dealt with Indian felons sentenced to prison terms in British possessions. outside India, where they served as a source of indentured, low-cost labor, the English substitute for slavery. Employed in public works, they drained marshes, built roads, and assisted in surveys where they sometimes encountered the tiger. Not only did they build the churches and the civic buildings that Coleman designed, but when brick prices soared in 1844, the prisoners made the very bricks with which they would build these buildings. In 1860, the prisoners were assigned to a building which in its final stages resembled a prison, upon which the prisoners realized that they were building their future jail. And then they all sang. To these prisoners, this sentence was a journey of no return. A voyage across the Kalapani, the black waters, in which the form of one's former life was dissolved like water. In water. Like water. For the prisoners, this constant caste defilement meant perpetual excommunication from their kin. The complete dissolution of life as lived.
As lived.
Like
this is a rather brutal in and out of a piece that, of course, has a longer narrative arch. I hope Sunyan forgives me for this brutality. So, what you see here on the screen on the left side in the original, on the right side in its computer-generated animation version, is what gives this whole work, is the picture that gives this whole work its initial cue that becomes sort of its cosmographic primal scene. This lithograph shows George Drumgold Coleman, land surveyor for Singapore, of Singapore for the British, in the 1830s, and as it's just narrated in the piece, in the excerpt you've seen, he was also in charge of the island's convict workforce. The theodolite, the image that you, the machine, the instrument that you see here in the center, that is the target of the tiger's attack, serves here perhaps as somehow an allegory of what is to come, the arrival of a vast web of mathematical operations and bureaucratic procedures, which we can say by now from that primal scene onward, and its many different instantiations and chronologies, of course, has been growing exponentially and has culminated in the information technologies we use today. At the time of George Coleman, though, this grid was virtually identical with empire. Yet the imperial frontier was still earthbound and linear, geared towards a horizon, enclosed by an outside that was unknown. The web initially woven by the theodolite has since then been extended to become what I've earlier called a planetary envelope, perhaps best exemplified by the thousands of satellites that map and orbit the planet Earth. It is into this planetary orbit that Ho Zhen Yan has displaced the figures from the lithograph, George Coleman, the tiger, and the theodolite, except the convicts and the initial backdrop, the jungle. These figures float displaced within space like a celestial constellation, eternally held in suspense. This initial frontier encounter becomes the foundational moment for a new cosmology. As if unchained from Earth, plunging backward, sideways, forward, in the cold light of undead time, the synthetic spectral bodies of human-animal and human-animal hybrid have been literally ungrounded. This is mostly the part that we have not seen, that precedes the excerpt we have seen. Perhaps they can be seen as echoing Nietzsche's madman who shudders with his lantern confronted with the modern abyss allegorized by the breath of empty space. Zhen Yan thus exposes and makes thematic the genre of cinematic animation and the status of CGI imagery, computer-generated imagery in particular, suggesting that it might serve as an allegory of our present cultural imaginary of the planetary technological condition. The groundless ontology of that cosmos, however, is haunted. And while haunting might symbolize the porosity of ontological divisions between life and death, past and present, it also typically holds reality hostage as if under a spell. Animation is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it suggests an ontological omnipotence. An entity can assume any form, can transgress any boundary. Even death in animation is reversible. On the other hand, this limitless possibility is bounded by impossibility. Invention is frequently jeopardized by the reification of normative schemes of perception managed within the matrix of the colonial imaginary and its fantasies of wilderness, metamorphosis, and the collapse of ordinary knowledge and its binaries. Must we hence imagine cinematic animation not only in the modern analogy to a pre-modern magic and enchanted world, but as its symptomatic displacement? Could we imagine the technology of animation to be a product of the spell cast by the theodolite? The animated image is the product of the frontier dialectics of capitalist modernity. The technology to produce the illusion of movement is the result of the rationalization of movement and of bodily gestures for factory work. In CGI, this dialectics underlying modern animation is pushed to new heights. CGI is no longer a representation that exists in whatever friction with what it represents. Rather, it is a data map. Animation is thus a counter gesture or a line of flight from the fixating grid. It's thus no longer a counter gesture or line of flight from the fixating grid, but rendered through its finest possible resolution. The growing leaves of a tree, for instance, are nowadays produced by generative algorithms modeling evolution itself. There is, figuratively speaking, no longer a tiger that attacks the theodolite as its antithesis. Rather, it is the theodolite itself that assembles or conjures up the phantasmagoric likeness of the tiger from countless data points. The difference is not merely between abstraction and flesh, between safe distance and threatening proximity, eye-level encounter, such as in this scene, or action at a distance, but the very dichotomies collapse that are dramatized in the picture of that tiger attack. If the animated image once was seen as reviving a foreclosed animism within modernity, then today it speaks to a different condition, that of a universalized Cartesian envelope, acting as the infrastructure of capitalism's fantasy of a dematerial universal mediality, achieved through digital code and its union with the medium of money. CGI might then be symptomatic of a permanently reconfiguring, meaning shape-shifting, capitalism that does not know how to die. One or several tigers is a reflection on the technological extension of the modern colonial enclosure into the realm of media technologies. It is an enclosure of mediumistic phenomena as such, of the mediumistic capacities of human subjects and the body politic. Today, technological applications have come to naturalize and fixate ontological templates derived from the colonial frontiers. Zunyan's work underlies that magic and technology, to use the words of Walter Benjamin, have to be seen as historical variables. Zunyan's delirious narrative is equivalent to a dream dreamt for the purposes of rendering a history of segregation and enclosure collective again. In the work, the tiger symbol moves from being a mediator of the ancestor world to symbolizing both the threat of chaos and domination to impersonating imperialist and capitalist predation. In the second part of One or Several Tigers, this dialectics is further enhanced. Zunyan does so by turning to the group of convicts, what we have just seen, that surround Coleman, the surveyor, during his triangulation of the land. While we listen to Ho telling us the story of Indian convicts in Singapore being charged with building their own prison, where eventually they would become each other's wardens and where surveillance was gradually replaced by self-surveillance, we watch real actors impersonating the convicts surrounding Coleman. That's the scene that follows what I have been showing you. And what we have seen is their bodily gestures being motion captured and scanned for 3D CGI rendering by a total of 82 cameras. The situation depicted in this image is an inversion of what, to come back to Benjamin one more time, Benjamin said with regard to early photography and moving images, namely that they restored gesture to the human technology of recording experience. Now these gestures, these bodies, feed machines to lend them a human face. Thus, the ghostly labor on which Singapore and colonial modernity at large has been built makes its appearance. The laborers depicted in the lithograph were convicted felons, as we heard, from India under British rule. They referred to these journeys, as we have heard, the journeys overseas, as a voyage through black waters, gradually dissolving their identity and destroying the past life like water in water. The motive of crossing and shape-shifting in this frontier space, mirrored by the relation between the mythical were-tiger and the medium of animation, hence gets another turn here. What the suspense in space was for the CGI animation of Coleman and the tiger is now mapped onto colonial history and the passage across the ocean, allegorizing the process of displacement and identity dissolution, the effacement of difference and of history. This dissolution of identity is at once an irretrievable loss and a potential, as water can stand for a zone of becomings, a medium of unruly mediations, or, alternatively, for the subsumption of everything under modernity's master medium, capital. The tipping of the dialectic hinges on that difference between different medialities, like water or water, a difference under threat of collapsing once and for all, just as the memory of the past. And such a moment of danger was the encounter between Coleman and the tiger, a flashing up of danger. Sun Yan projected them into cosmic space, mirroring capital's dream of overcoming the bounds of matter. Water and wanter stands for a vanishing difference between techno-capitalism's fantasy of a universal mediality and the search for different forms of global commonality in the ruins of imperial history. Thank you very much. Now we're going to see a short film by Ritu Saarinen and Tenzing Sonam, called Middle Way or Independence, before we proceed to the lecture by James Scott. Thanks.
Hey, 뭐 관계가 단다. 샹그는 뭐지? 고지 노진 저거는 뭐. 아메라 어제
그거 때 말이. 사야지. 나 체했어요. 우리 본나라
나도 놀러 가기 되게
지는
자체 뭐 뭐. 이미 더 많이. 진도 놀러 가기 배 맞다.
가서 섬지 뒤딜까? 뭐 해야 돼. 언제 잠아 고세니 켜샤 말도. 어미람 고세니 켜두야.
당연히 자기인다.
마 휴두야.
얘네 자기다. 얘네 자기다. 시도 찬이. 시도 찬이 셴. 시도 찬이 셴어 이노. 니네 저는 배 디세이 디세이 카드 디제 뜻이는 말이나 루솔리 또 그런 여함이
그렇게도 말을
안 해요. 예예예 예나요. 단단 예제데 아멜 아멜랑 가르리 아멜라리
그래
아멜로 따와라 이나 라살 랭게데 단다데 제세준 로기
사마도 보 사그리 유조 바리
배사 유조데 가지 루트 좀아 이 라데이데 가르세노 잠이 전에 거리에 아멜로 샹게르 뭐지 고지 아멜한테 거다라단 체야 말이
버 어르 더우르 노 다르다 나 거다라다 마테나 노 다라게 점자도 셰서 한다 결혼하니 카르토소스나 보사 요스조 왜 보러 한다 잠아 이세네 깨자기도 와 보사야 두 두그 나니 내가 범직 하마실리오 마 처음에 보인 나요리 뒤 처음에 한테 잠아 고세요 네 나니 초반가 아 범이 말도 신 잠아 의미 다 한테 잠아리 디 인자 마마 마치가디 라자자미 람라 친구 요자 야름지 니마치 텔라 고바시니 라자자마 제용고레 음밀람텔라 다비다 타다마소나 토차리 야미 운네 마치 다가소 다가소 라자자마 제니 야미 음밀람라 야레 마치다 마소 티치 라자자마 고세니 제게 오 보드 데다 마스 버세다 보란자자마 마타 버다나수 탑도데 치레 나소 티글랑가 치레 야름지 티글랑 고바시니 음밀람테 단 요보 이제 왔다가 뒤에서 차살해.
어이, 대로.
빨리.
뒤놓아, 제발.
여러분들 뒤놓아, 뒤왔다고.
여러분들 가시오, 제발. 빨리. 장기를, 체력을, 체력을.
여러분들 가시오,
빨리. 체력을 루트 좀만 일하지. 체력 준비 세준이. 체력 준비 세준이. 예수, 일하요. 일하, 일하. 오늘 다 봐서 만두 비켜줘.
예수,
나도 다가 만두.
맞다.
내래다.
보자니 분나 삼로다니 보자니 분다 소곤 로소도 말로 까자 셴을 주머치 시빌 남고 돈이 되어서 세대 야르 뭐지 고시니 야미가 되라 야르 만장 아란주 보자니 분 삼로 까자 요망 아주 보란자 자마 인실 시엔자 보사 용수 저거 다 놓게 한번 자지 보란자 자마 신이 깨베 자요네
네 저자 그 깨딩 아주 가르스나 다 지난 가르스나 다 아주 가르스나 뿐언이 호밀란 시기요 말 삼월랑 센터 그 세월에서 이나요 겨울 보시거라 호밀란 호밀란 텔라페피 호밀란 티라 멤멍라 치모즈고 고다 쳐요자 소가 디고 고밀랑고 고다디 치모즈고 쳐요자 질리 멤멍고 치모즈고 히토요자 아까데 달래 데 치랑 데스 요라 요마 데 히토 요라 요마리
그러나 요 아디야 야와르 뭐지 의미랑고 간나한테 변나라 나서 히토 야친부 용토고 말이
제치부 요라
아디 담아디 히토 야친부 용토고 말 야미 간고 고토니 시다 히 고도시에다 용토고 말 있나야 엄마니소 단다바다 가려리 푸던 갸니 갸르감 로가치야 그 특숨스 시대월 마르토 본는 그 갸지마만 그 나소 본니 용인이다 나소 바바마니 손에 참이 가레 특숨 시월에세나 푸던 갸니 로가치야 그 삼우스다 갸르급세서 본 갸르급 로스토야 그 특숨 시니 단다바다 내가 된대요
된디스 마르토 미쵸 용치점 그때 겨울 보치고 괄호티라 멈 질리 멈몰라 제참 보치기 치와 이나 질리 멈몬 그 산로 짓짓 덩그라 덩그 말
짓짓 덩그 말
덩그 말 짓짓 가르 짓짓
가르 짓짓 달로 가르쳐 송세나 아니 숨지 뒤든 당주지 세기비 토라 뒤단다 와도다 베스 동당아지 개미 좀가 좀 문니게라 세가로 와 대세야디 모다 가르 줘샤 포란즈 짬마 인세니 모다 줘요
개미 당가 띠라 저원 보시고 과보 띠라 저원 보시고 과보 띠 멤마라 케요 마레스 테디 마와나 저원 보시고 과보 띠 니리치 시와이나 마나 질 멤마가 사모요 다랑시 저원 보시고 저원 보시고 컨소 나지고 가르사 질 멤마가 자티크 당아도 시글 아도 되게 시글
대가 맞어
말해
아
자로모체 니방 시스템 시글 질자지 멤마가 포고 코라 마토 삼노 코라 당겨 말 엄마 랍다 삼마고 맞던 시글 마토 자로모체 포제 니방 삼노
드세 에나 라 에나 질이 자지 멤마가 캐도 야와르 모체 그 카드 소나 아 치송 카드 다 따위 모두 코비나 나 시글에서 말해 옛날에 포 보기 잘고 또야 네가 알래
온데 잠아
오늘 전에 여름 뭐지 그 보제 입은 그 특숨 시기도 있나 맞어 한테 잠아 고생을 안가 대가 치그리서 와 야자자 이치 잠아요
대처 이치야
대처 대처는 이치 잠으라 다치 이치 잠바 다치 다치 단단 랑나 디카레스나 여름 뭐지 그 여름 뭐지 고민랑 그 고토디 Maman la paye au Marais, là, ça. Maman la coteau paye au Marais. Maman la coteau paye au Marais. Dis, j'en sais, on est sur un. Tu vois, on est sur toi. Dis, j'en sais, j'ai caressé. T'attends, j'en sais, l'an des, j'en sais, chéri au des. Il n'y a un yon, parce que Romil antique déchet. Géo, j'en sais, tellement, cousin, la cotage, tu vois, il n'a. Nazo, salutira, saluti, j'y t'en m'a super mari. Nazo caressé, Romil antique, Nazo, Romil antique, Romil antique, Romil antique. Ja. Po sama la pem kepen jura nazo la goya te karas na kepen joya rangsei na ra go gome la ne
nazo se na pon ka talo raza sama zo ya de jawar jo mi lang de kuda man cha ba ri ndo do song do talo sum ji te den ta shup ji she ge bi sum ji de ta ri che ni ka to ma la ni ma su pai ji gore kon zo ni bon ko so ju la yong de jawar mo ji ka lam na jawar jo mi lang tu tu sa jo ra ni man do jo de po ja da che mo sum she se kon ni ni man do ni po ja da ha sa ni ya lang ju ma su pai ji go mo ji shi yo de za mi sa jo ra ni man do jo de mi lang ra mo mi lang ko ko dan che ni man do jo de po ra za sa ma yin se ni pa ke la ni ka ma ja ni talo sum ji de de ta shup ji che go to ma ke ma ja ni kon do re 지연상가 란도면 제가 정말 여름이지 아 의미남 그 수지대 그 주나야 소소 소소군이 보고 데다 세야 돼 란서자미고 란속대 손은 조요래세 미
미케라
그바시지 야미가 야다 마오데 간라 당니 그 데다서다 데서마리 나서 분자 사야 사야 지다 치가 사요 달로 타도 종이니서 총사리 다교 만도니 가서고 의미남 토와이나 그 보 야다데 마파니 야미 야다 야츠니 그 데다서다 데서마리 Matila, tell a language. Tell a Mugutima. Need to what the language are. We must
nature. Jamigo, one that Deguna and Azula kept on the dinner. Nazula got the kitten. Nazula, Chetan Turanga, Nicholasa. Nazula got the kitten. Nazula, Bianca,
Alatomoyana. Azuko, Omila, Tomasi. Razor, Jodo, Tomayana. Jamie Montosan, Azula, Razakama, Ragamare. Azura, Razakama, Jamie Montosan, Azura, Razakama, Rangri.
Rakijim.
마초 임발라 랑서 좀 해서 좀 해서 오늘 라사나 오늘 라사나 랑서 좀 랑서 좀 해서 좀 말해 쇼 지금
이거
Welcome again to those who have arrived now or recently. My name is Anselm Frank and I'm co-hosting this weekend together with Yeonjin Kim and David Tae, my co-curators, also for the exhibitions in the other part of the building. What we've just seen was Ritu Zarin and Tenzing Sonam's short film Middle Way or Independence, which I guess you can sense is part of a large body of work on the Tibetan question. They are filmmakers, installation artists, and also directors of the Dharamshala International Film Festival. I'm really happy now to introduce James Scott. I'm glad that you could make it. Speak to us this evening. James Scott is professor both of anthropology and political science at Yale University, where he also directs the Agrarian Studies Program. Many of his fantastic publications are just outside, I believe also to look at and for sale. And I just wanted to note, just add a note about his forthcoming book, which I believe is out in a few weeks. Entitled Against the Grain and Deep History of Early Agrarian States. And we look forward to that and to your talk now. Thanks.